Okay, good evening. We are looking at a Zemaima Hasidi, a Hasidic discourse. And it is by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, which he said, this Parshat HaShavua, Achalei Kedoshim, in the year 1985. So that's 25 years ago. And a Maimar Chassidi, a Hasidic discourse, takes a concept, it takes a pasuk, a few words from the Parshat HaShavua, from the Sedra, or from some other text, and it uses it as a kind of a window, like a mochalon, and through that window one gets a perspective on some further dimension in Jewish teaching, Jewish life, with the background of the whole Kabbalistic structure of Svirot, Olamot, spiritual dimensions, worlds. And this one takes the verse, if we can just look at it on the in the Parsha, it is in Kedoshim, which is the second Pasha, it is verse 7, Pasuk Zayin 7, V'hit kadishtem v'yitem kadoshim. You should make yourselves holy, and you will be holy. Ki ani Hashem Elokechem. Because I am Hashem your God. So it's an interesting phrase. You should make yourselves holy, and you will be holy. The whole parsha begins with the words Kadoshim tiyu. You should be holy, ki kadosh ani, because I am holy. The whole concept of holiness is a fascinating concept. We use the word kiddushin for a woman to be betrothed. That's kiddushin. We use the word kiddush on Shabbat. That's so one way of understanding the idea of Kedusha is in some way separate, set apart, something special. However, we'll see the discourse is going to use this concept from a Talmudic passage. And so that's so we'll start with the discourse and we'll see where it takes us. There's also another pasuk which is relevant, incidentally, which we might as well look at now, from Yechezkel. This Yechezkel, Perek Mem Aleph, chapter 41 of Yechezkel, verse 22, at the bottom of the right-hand side. HaMizbeach Eitz. This is a vision which Yechezkel HaNavi, which is Hezekiah the prophet, is having, where an angel is showing him around the temple. It's a vision in which he's being shown around the temple, and he's told Hamizbeach Eitz Shalosh Amot Gavua. The Mizbeach, the altar, is made of wood, 3 cubits high, V'orko Shtaim Amot U'miktzotov Lo, and its length is 2 amot, 2 cubits, and it's got corners. V'orko, there's a misprint, it's orko, the under the resh should be a shva. V'kurotav 8, and its length and its walls are wood. V'yedaber Eli, and the angel said to me, Zeh ha-shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. This is the table which is before God. Now these last words are very famous because they help us understand what is the nature of our table that we eat at. The table is in some sense an altar. So he's calling the altar the table before God, so we understand the other way around. Our table, HaShulchan Shelanu, our table in our living room is the altar. So it's got some spiritual quality of the Mizbeach, of the altar in the temple. Okay, so those are two of the basic texts. There's another one that we will come to, which is in Pirkei Avot. That's why I wanted the Siddur, because in Pirkei Avot, we'll look there when we come to it. Now, we generally sing a nigun as an introduction to this discourse. Now we're beginning the discourse, which where it begins, v'hit kadishtem v'hitem kadoshim. And you notice it says, hanachat hatmimim bilti muga. It says at the top, transcribed by the students and has not been checked, because the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, would give talks and discourses, and his students would write them down, as is the case of many scholars in Jewish history, like Rabbi Yitzhak Luria. Rabbi Yitzhak Luria did not write himself. All he wrote himself that we know of are some poems for Shabbat. For each of the three meals of Shabbat, there is a poem written by Rabbi Yitzhak Luria. But his teachings were taught by Reb Chaim Vital, and that's how we know the Lurianic teachings, the Shmoneh Sha'arim, Eight Gates, Eitz HaChaim, the Tree of Life. These are books that Reb Chaim Vital wrote expounding Rabbi Yitzhak Luria's ideas. How he did it exactly, we don't know. We don't, you know, did Rabbi Yitzhak Luria give a talk and then Reb Chaim Vital went home and wrote it down? Or did he just remember it all? You know, how much is Reb Isaac Luria, how much is Reb Chaim Vital? We don't know. But these teachings we do know, because there was a very clearly established system. A similar system began in the end of the 18th century with Rabbi Schneur Zalman, the founder of Chabad, that he would talk and the students would write it down. Not so much the students. His brother would write it down. His sons would write it down. His grandson would also write it down. So, and then sometimes, coming to the 20th century, the Rebbe would check one of them, would edit it, and it would be printed in his lifetime as a edited work. But this one was not edited. And so the melody to introduce a maimah, a Hasidic discourse, there's a, the idea that there is, within Torah teaching, there are melodies. And the melody helps one open to the discourse, to the teaching. Oh, ya, 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 Aho ya yere lamba ya ya ho ya yere lamba ya ma yo ho yere lamba ho yere lamba yo ya ma ya ya yere lamba ho ya 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 yere lamba ho ya ya ho ya ya yo vihit kadishtem vihitem kadoshim. You should make yourself holy and you will be holy. Now, the third Chabad Rebbe, called the Tzemach Tzedek, his actual name was Menachem Mendel. He lived around 1850. And he brings, 150 years ago, so he brings in his book called Be'or HaTorah al HaPasuk, his maimah, his own discourse on this. Masha Amru, Rabbeinu Zichronam Livracha, what our sages of blessed memory, what they said, B'Masechet Brachot, in the tractate Brachot, in the Talmud, Al Pasuk HaMizbeach Eitz. Now this is the Pasuk, the verse from Yechezkel, from Yizkiah. The altar is made of wood, Vayadaber Elai, and he said to me, Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem, this is the table before God. Now what did they say? In the Talmud, there, Brachot, you can see footnote 3, it gives a reference where in the Talmud, 55a, Nun Hei Amud Aleph, Kol Zman Shebeit HaMikdash Kayam Mizbeach Mechaper Al Yisrael. The whole time that the temple existed, the altar atoned for the Jewish people. as we have in the first Sedra this week. You see, this is taking a verse from the second Sedra, Kedoshim. But this week there are two Parshiyot, there are two Sedrot. And in the first Sedra is the whole account of the service on Yom Kippur. So we can see that on Yom Kippur there is a whole ceremony in order to atone for the Jewish people. Kol zman shebeit hamikdash kayam mizbeach mechaper Yisrael. All the time the temple is there, the altar atones for the Jewish people. In fact, not only on Yom Kippur, but throughout the year, many of the offerings have the effect of atonement, like a chatat, a sin offering. A sin offering is brought when a person by accident did some kind of transgression. So they bring a sin offering, and that atones for them. So what happens now? What happens now that there's no temple? Va'achshav shulchano shel adam mechapeh alav. Now, says the Talmud, the table of a person atones for him. Interesting idea. The table of a person atones for him. Now, v'yesh levaya kesha inyanim, one can explain the link between these ideas, the pasuk zeh behitkadishtem, this verse about being more holy, l'inyan shulchano shel adam, with the idea of the table of a person. We can make the connection al pi ma she'amru razal bebrachot, according to what the sages said in the same tractate of the Talmud, footnote 5, but it's a little bit earlier, it's on a different page. Nun Gimel Amud Bet, 53b. It's a couple of pages earlier. So there, it says, V'hit kadishtem, so it's quoting this verse, and it says, what does it mean, V'hit kadishtem? Eilu mayim rishonim. These are the first waters. When a person eats bread, the tradition, linking in various ways historical concepts and others, the tradition is to wash one's hands before eating bread. Of course, the hands should be clean anyway. So hygiene is an important Jewish concept. But this is a ritual washing of the hands. The hands have to be clean before they're washed ritually. So then when the hands are clean, then there is a ritual washing of the hands. There are different ways of doing it, pouring three times on one hand, three times on the other hand, or twice, or once, different customs which come from the code of law. The code of law presents different ways of doing it, and there are different customs how one actually does it. But that idea, what it's saying here in the Talmud, is v'hit kadishtem, the word you should make yourself holy means the water that we wash before eating. V'yitem kadoshim, and then you will be holy. Eilu mayim achronim, these are the water that we wash after eating. Now this is a much less popular custom, but it exists in the among traditional, let's say, sort of more traditional environment, that before Birkat HaMazon, particularly the men will wash their fingers before Birkat HaMazon. It's also rooted in the Talmud, but it is much less common in general Jewish life than washing before eating. That's quite a popular concept, washing before eating. So I don't know the results of any surveys, but it's less common, the idea of washing before Birkat HaMazon. But it's the idea is that there was certain kinds of salt. It's called Melach Sodomit. The Sodomite salt, the salt of Sodom, was used as a kind of preservative, and it was something that one wanted to wash off the fingers. I don't know, maybe people left with their hands as well. That's never mentioned. It's never said in that way. But so that they should.
Melach Dumit is said?
Yeah, Melach Dumit is said in the Gemara. That's what it mentions in the Talmud as the reason for this washing afterwards. Then there's a whole Kabbalistic concept. The Kabbalistic concept is that on the fingers there's a little bit of food due to eating. That food is being washed away and is being sent La'azazel. Now, La'azazel links with the parsha of this week. The Sa'ir La'azazel, the goat which is sent to a rocky place. In other words, it's like giving a dog a bone so that the dog doesn't bother you. So someone comes through a place and there's a dog barking, so he gives the dog a piece of meat, and the dog eats that meat and doesn't bother the man. So the same with the washing of Mayim Acharonim, the water at the end of the meal, it is like giving something to this negative realm, and as a result this water is considered very impure. So people wash into a little bowl, then they take the bowl off the table, or they cover it. They don't leave it open. They cover the bowl, and you can buy a present for a person. Mayim Acharonim sets, and it's a nice thing made of copper or something like that, and with a little title, Mayim Acharonim. It's the kind of thing people bring back from Israel when they go.
We do it in Pesach.
On Pesach you do it.
I said that we do it.
That's very nice.
Ivanka goes with Mayim Acharonim around the table for the man.
For the before Birkat HaMazon?
Yes.
That's her Beit Yaakov upbringing.
Maybe. But only on Pesach. Maybe Pesach I can remember. It's
well, because it's like more formal, a more formal situation. Mm-hmm. So it comes out.
Tradition.
You
know there are sets for
Mayim Acharonim. Yeah, that's it's interesting. Some people make them in silver, and then there's a custom not to have silver because it's got this negative quality. You know, so silver is something
positive.
Kesef means nichsof nichsafti, love, you know, spirituality. So a mezuzah case might be silver, but the Mayim Acharonim, it's more suitable copper or something like that. It could be wood. But in modern Israel, there is a whole genre of arty ceramics of different kinds, wood painted in bright colors and glazed with varnish. Traditional neo-traditional industry. Someone bought me a present, a stand to put a shofar, which was, you know, like
very useful.
Very interesting, coloring beautiful colors. Wooden, carved out of wood. But this is like modern developments in Israeli culture. So here it's saying that the Hit Kadishtim, that's the waters at the beginning of the meal. The Yitem Kadoshim Elu Mayim Acharonim are the waters at the end of the meal before Birkat HaMazon. Ani Hashem Elokechem, which is a continuation of this verse, I am the Lord your God, Zubracha. That's the blessings. Whether it's the blessing that we say before eating or the Birkat HaMazon that we say after eating, it's as if we are doing certain things. We are washing our hands, which is making us holy in various ways. And then there's a kind of a hashra'a, an indwelling of godliness. Ani Hashem Elokechem, I'm Hashem your God. Which we achieve through saying the blessing. But it has a spiritual effect. From this we can understand the wholeness of the table of a person. In other words, the meal at the table. We're not talking here about the study of Torah at the table where we're not having a meal. Here it's talking about a meal. See, there is the concept that a person, what is a table for? A table is for eating, or you might be sitting at the table. At the table, there's a Talmud, a volume of Gemara, and you're studying Gemara. So the table is itself an expression of Torah study, pure and simple. Sometimes when a great person passes away, they make the coffin out of their table. When the late Lubavitcher Rebbe passed away, they made the coffin for him out of his desk. Because he had spent so many hours studying Torah, so the idea is, this is a common custom, let the table testify, me'id, for this person, how much Torah he studied at that table. So it's a custom of making the coffin out of the table for a Torah scholar whose table is going to say that he studied a lot of Torah. If the person didn't study that much Torah, then it wouldn't be so appropriate. But here it's not talking about that. Here it's talking about the table that we eat. The table where we eat. Now, the table where we eat also has a Torah dimension, as is mentioned in Pirkei Avot, which we'll come to. But the first concept is that here we are at the table, and so therefore, the meal shebeshulchan. So the fullness of the table of a person where he eats his meals. You should be sanctified, you should sanctify yourselves and become holy. Through the first water and the second washing. There's also the blessing at the beginning and the blessing at the end as well, which is interesting. In the halacha, the blessing at the end of the meal is midoraita. It's from the Torah. If we eat bread, enough bread to be satisfied, then it says v'achalta v'savata uverachta et Hashem. So that's a command from the Torah to say grace after meals, birkat hamazon. But the sages, hachachamim, the rabbis established also blessings before food. So we say various blessings, hamotzi lechem min haaretz, and so on. Blessing on bread. So the washing and the blessing, all this is part of the spirituality of the table.
Can I ask one question? I'm confused about itkadishtem. Why not itkadashtem? What's the difference? It looks strange to me that it says itkadishtem. I can see it says it is itkadishtem here. Why not itkadashtem? What's the difference between kadishtem?
I must say I don't know. I don't even know if this is considered an unusual form. You know, there are lots of different ways when people say Kaddish. Yitkadal v'yitkadash. But some people say Yitkadel v'yitkadesh. You know, they're different. That might be the difference, whether they think it's Aramaic or Hebrew. But I actually don't know. The Kaddish. I don't know. I mean, obviously, the Hitbael has a dogish in the middle letter of the root, as we see over here. V'hitkadishtem. V'hitkadish. I don't know. So, it's an interesting question. One would have to look at a grammatical analysis.
Gizenius. Maybe.
Yes, could be. I mean, it could be Ibn Ezra would say something on the spot. But, he might.
It doesn't. There is no comment Rashi or anything like this.
Not that I remember about this point. Mm-hmm. Not that I remember. Okay. So, I mean, there are modern texts, you know, which will analyze each pasuk grammatically, you know, why is... because there are many strange forms in the Mikra. Okay, so I'm sorry I can't answer that. Now, so there we have V'zeo gam ha-keshem inyan ha-kadusha. That's also the connection with the idea of holiness. Kadoshim to you, as we have at the beginning of the parsha, you should be holy. What does holiness mean? And that's an interesting question. See, what is holiness? You have a comment by Rashi, a famous comment by Ramban, Nachmanides. The Perush Rashi, Pchushim tiyu min ha'ariyot u'min ha'avera. Be separate from sexual immorality and from transgressions. In other words, where there are desires, strong desires which draw a person, there are traps of different kinds and one has to hold back, one has to control oneself, and this is Kedusha. Ramban famously says something a bit different. Rashi is saying it's to keep away from transgressions. Ramban says, no, Kadosh means to keep away from that which is permitted. Kadosh atzmacha b'mutalacha. That which is permitted, you should exercise self-restraint. He says it's possible to follow all the rules of the Torah, not break any rules, and still be naval b'roshut ha-Torah. One could be a coarse person with the permission of the Torah, because all the food that the person eats is kasher, but he's a glutton. He's just filling himself up with food, he indulges himself in a terrible way. The way Ramban, living in an Islam, he was actually living in a Christian society, but it could be a person has many wives, according to Jewish teaching, certainly before Rabbeinu Gershom, that's right. And so he could spend his life making love all the time, all permitted. But he's just indulging himself his entire life. So Ramban says, Kadoshim to you means Kadesh Atzmecha b'mutalacha. But Rashi says, no, it's Pirushim ti yu min ha'arayot min ha'avera. Separate yourself from immorality and transgression. Ki inyan achila, because the concept of eating, kasheinu kedabai, when it is not in an appropriate way, yachol liot gam kein inyan shel avera. The eating can also be in a way of a transgression. Kamayim Razal, now this actually brings it a little bit more like the Ramban's interpretation. Kamayim Razal, as the sages say, malei chesei zanei bishi. Filling one's belly is a form of bad. Bish means bad. Zine means min, mine. Malei chesei, filling one's stomach, malei cheso, yes, filling one's belly, is a form of evil. V'lachein tzarich liot inyan shel pchishut. Therefore, there has to be the concept of self-restraint. How do we express the self-restraint? Shezeu al yidei mayim rishonim u'mayim achronim. Somehow, the washing of the hands before the meal, the washing of the hands after the meal, represent some kind of self-restraint. They represent the attempt to sanctify the act of eating. It's interesting that universally, eating is a very problematic issue for human beings. And as a result, in almost every culture, there are food rituals of different kinds. I mean, the English food rituals are simply where you put the knives and forks. There is a particular seder of how you lay a place. You know, you have the plates and then you have the forks on the left, and the little fork for the fish has to be on the outside, and then the bigger fork, then the same with the knives, then one spoon here, one spoon there. Norman Mailer, the American Jewish writer, he said he would happily confess to his psychiatrist, for example, that he dreams of strangling his aunt, but if someone would accuse him of using the wrong fork at a dinner party, he would be deeply upset. You know, hey, that's the fish fork you're using. So these are the sensitivities that people have, presumably because eating is so similar, it's so clearly an animal mode of behavior, because we see animals eat around us. And so we want to make clear that we're human beings, and so we eat in a very delicate way. I think the Chinese in Manchuria, the old China, had tremendous rituals attached with the way they would serve a meal, and were very, very complicated ritual things. So the idea of rituals around a meal is a universally understandable thing. And which, of course, in modern life, you know, with fast food, kosher McDonald's, is slowly being transformed. But even so, so there we have the idea of the attempt to sanctify eating. That's going to give us more tangible ways in a minute. Umevaya Sham, and it explains there in this discourse that he's quoting, by the Tzemach Tzedek of 150, 160 years ago. And it explains there, Inyana kapara shel shulchano shel adam, the idea of the atonement that the table of a person achieves, bahakdim biyur inyana kapara de mizbeach, by first explaining the atonement of the altar. Alright, so we got a number of parallelisms over here. You see, the nature of these Hasidic discourses is the parallels between the activities that take place in our human world and spiritual dimensions. Now, very often the spiritual dimensions that are being referred to are sfirot, the divine emanations, something like that. Here, in this discourse, it is more a parallel to the temple, the everlasting temple. There's the temple and the altar, and there's the table of the person in their home, and there's some kind of parallel taking place between them. The Gabi Mizbeach Amru Lazal, about the altar, the sages tell us, that's in another passage in the Talmud, in Ketubot, Mizbeach Maziach. Now, what does the word Mizbeach mean? Maziach Gzerot. Gzerot is really a explanation. What is it, maziach? It's maziach gzerot. Maziach means it removes harsh decrees. Mazin, it gives food. Mechabev, it makes beloved. Umechaper avonot, and atones for sins. So you can see a kind of notarikan. You can see a kind of initial letters. Mizbeach. Mem is Maziach, Zayin is Zan, Chet is Mechabev. Okay, so somehow rather, the Bet and the Chet together. Mechabev, maybe the Bet is Mechabev, and Mechaper Avonot. It doesn't quite fit. But that's the concept. What does the Mizbeach do? It does all these different things. It removes harsh decrees, it feeds, because the whole world is fed through the schut of the korbanot, the merit of the offerings in the temple. It makes us beloved to God, and it atones for sins. Shemizeh muvan, from this we understand, she'ikaro shel mizbeach hi hakapara. The main thing about the altar is the final concept there, atonement. V'chein muvan gam mima she'amru b'midrash. Similarly, we understand from another midrash, Mizbeach hu rosh tevot. Mizbeach is initial letters. Mem mechila, forgiveness. Zayin zchut, merit. Beit bracha, blessing. Chet chayim, life. The rosh teva mizbeach hu ot mem. Now the beginning of the word altar, mizbeach, is the letter mem, which is Hainu Inyana Mechila Shia Kapara. That's the forgiveness, the atonement. Shemikol Zeh Muvan, and from all this it's understood, Sheikar Inyana Mizbeach, that the main concept of the altar, Hia Kapara Shebo, is the atonement in it. Valderech Zeh Gam B'Shulchano, Valderech Zeh B'Shulchano Shel Adam, so too with the altar of a person. So here we have the idea in this paragraph that the altar and the person's table relate to each other. The idea of washing before the meal, washing before grace after meals, and the brachot which are said, they all express the holiness of the table, and all this links it back to the altar, and the altar is that which atones. And the sages tell us in Brachot that now the table is that which atones. So we've got a cluster of ideas around the table and around the altar, which are sort of synchronizing together. And now we take it a bit further. Ubi'ai inyan hu. Now, explaining this matter. Kamavua behemshech hamayim hasham, as it explains there in that discourse. Dihine klalut inyan avodat hakorbanot shal hamizbeach. The main function of the service of the offerings on the altar, tochano hi avodat habirurim, is the idea of the work of sifting. Now, the work of birurim is a Kabbalistic concept. Yitzhak, are you familiar with that idea in terms of avodat habirurim, the service of sifting? Now, Eli, you're familiar with it.
I've heard it a few times, yes.
Now, the point is that this relates to the concept according to Kabbalat Ha'ari, according to Rabbi Isaac Luria's teachings, that before the beginning of creation as we know it, in other, as we think of it in the Torah, yes, that there is a world. Before there was a physical world, there was a process which was taking place. And in fact, we are at the second stage of that process, which is why our Torah begins with the Beit, Bereshit. There was an earlier stage where, so to speak, the Torah began with Aleph. Now, what is the process? The process is one of the infinite somehow becoming finite. Because that's the process of creation. God is infinite. And something or other has to happen in order for this infinite radiance, energy, which is godliness, to make room for a world. And so Rabbi Isaac Luria describes different aspects of this process. And the one that we're focusing on now, you may have heard the concept tzimtzum, the contraction of the light. But that's not the one that he's talking about, that I'm focusing on for this minute. It's the idea of orot v'kelim, radiance and vessels. That in order for the infinite to somehow be part of and allow a finite world, radiance, which in itself, the image of divine radiance, or Eloki, divine light, is somehow going to fit into vessels. Now, kelim. Now, what are these vessels? One of the ways they describe the vessel is formed mehit avut ha'or, from a thickening of the light. So, the vessel is also divine. In fact, it is an intensification of divine power which is able to control the radiance. That's the point of the vessel. The vessel is a way in which the radiance is confined. And by confining the radiance step by step by step coming down, we finally eventually come into this physical world where there is somehow a delicate balance between radiance and vessel. That means there is a finite realm which is expressed by the vessel, and intimations of ruchaniyut, of spirituality, which is expressed by the radiance. If we were only thought about the vessel, we would only think about a finite material world. If we only thought about the radiance, we would be very flighty spiritual people. So somehow there needs to be a joining together of the radiance in the vessel. The radiance has to be contained by the vessel. Now, what fascinates psychotherapists like Ellie's wife Malka and others is the image that at the beginning of creation there was shvirat hakelim, there was breaking of the vessels. The orot, the radiance, was too powerful for the kelim, and as a result the kelim broke. And that leads, that's a kind of cosmic cataclysm which leads to the complexities of Olam Hazeh, which we're living in. And that is why Olam Hazeh has got paradoxical qualities within it. There are klipot, which are forces of evil. But these klipot, which literally means shells, are sometimes explained as the broken pieces of the kelim, so to speak. So in fact, they originate with some spiritual dimension. And in fact, within the klipa is a nitzutz shel kedusha. There's a spark of light still trapped in the keli, in the broken keli. So here we have the paradoxical dimension of life, that there are areas of life where there's a strong spiritual radiance, but it's somehow in the wrong place or in the wrong way, and that's causes the whole muddle of existence. Avodat habirurim, the service of sifting, is the task of man and woman, particularly the Jew, to search among these broken pieces, which is really Olam Hazeh, our world, and to connect with the sparks of Kedusha, the holiness, the sparks of holiness, and to sift them out. To connect them to their shoresh lemaila, to their root above. And this is called avodat habirurim. And that is the task of the human being, and particularly the Jew, in the world, challenged by different challenges which come from this spiritual energy which is all around in a confused way. And by us having the choice, whether this way or that way, and hopefully we choose the right choice, we rescue that spark of Kedusha and connect it above. So this is Avodat HaBirurim, and this is really what the Korbanot are doing, the offerings, the animal offerings, are doing on the altar. Because when we bring an animal offering, which might be an ox or a goat or a lamb, so there's a sense in which there is a spiritual energy in this animal offering. And the animal offering is being burnt on the altar. It's slaughtered and then burnt on the altar. The spiritual dimension of the ox or the goat or the lamb is then connected with the divine. However, it also relates to the animal inside us. Because within us too, we have a nefesh habahamid, an animal soul. And so when we offer an ox on the altar, it is our own animal soul, the aspect of our own inner ox, the shor within. Now some people are more like a shor, an ox, and some people are more like a seh, like a lamb. Different personality types. and some people are more like an eith, a goat. So these are personality types. And it's interesting that this is an idea that Rabbi Shneur Zalman wrote sometime in the he taught it in the first decade of the 19th century or the last decade of the 18th century. But Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch writes the same idea. So Rabbi Shneur Zalman's teachings were published in 1847. And the fact that Hirsch mentions the same idea in a book, I think he wrote 1860, something like that, might indicate some kind of cross-fertilization of ideas from Russia to Central Europe, to Frankfurt. So there we have, since part of my ancestry comes from Frankfurt, I always want to link that in.
What did Samson Raphael Hirsch write?
He wrote a very extensive commentary on the Torah in German. A German commentary on the Torah, full of fascinating interpretations, which are very often seen as his own original interpretations. But I noticed this one, which is there in Likutei Torah, published in 1847 in Jitome or something. So it's a long commentary on the Torah, and I think it's been recently republished in English translation. It was published in English translation by someone I knew living in London, Diane Grunfeld, Alav HaShalom, and he translated this into English, and it's just recently, I think, been republished.
What is it called?
I think just call it Hirsch, the Pentateuch, something like that. Hirsch Chumash, Perusha, commentary on the Chumash.
Didn't he write an etymological dictionary as well?
A dictionary, I don't remember. He wrote a very famous book, his first book, 19 Letters of Ben Uzia, which are letters from a young German Jew explaining his philosophy of Judaism in the modern world. This is around 1860. But very relevant. Then there's another book called Choreb, which is a kind of, I think it's a collection of essays. He wrote many essays for journals and magazines. He was fighting a number of battles. He was fighting for a view of traditional Judaism in the modern world, and he was countering Geiger, who was the head of the Reform movement, who was in Frankfurt at the same time as him. So the head of the Reform and the head of what historians call neo-Orthodox, Hirschian Orthodoxy, they were in the same town in Frankfurt at the same time, around 1870. And then Hirsch organized what was called the Austritzgemeinde, which was a separate Jewish community. And that was a very interesting concept, which has its effect till today, the idea of a separate Orthodox community. So, for example, here in London, there is the Union of Orthodox Congregations, which is it's separate to the London Bet Din, and it is supposed to be more stringent in all kinds of ways, and it's got its own Bet Din and its own kashrut and its own cemetery and its own this and its own that. It's a direct descendant from Hirsch's Austritzgemeinde, and it was set up by German Jews who came to England in 1915 and knew how to organize this kind of
separation.
So that's which was itself a controversial thing even in Frankfurt in Hirsch's time, because there was another rabbi called Rabbi Bamberger, the Würzburger Rav, who didn't want this separation. He said we have to try and make the whole community more religious. And so they're different. There's always the machlok. There's always different.
I have a bit of a conceptual difficulty with the Shvirat HaKelim. Because to me it sounds like something was faulty in the design. And I can't believe that Hashem had a faulty design, so I must be seeing it wrong.
Well, how do you account for evil in today's world, or a person having a nervous breakdown, or illness, God forbid? It's also God's design. I'll add the other argument for you, that in these cases, not illness really, but you could say evil, human evil, well, that's human beings making the wrong choice, whereas here you've got existence in itself. So I can see your problem, and the way that I would suggest it the answer to this, or a way of understanding an answer to it, has the clock disappeared?
It's facing that way.
Oh, I see.
The face is by the plant.
Is that metaphysical? Oh.
No, I think
Ellie. Oh, I see.
Did I?
No. Maybe. When you
took I can see.
It's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Thank you.
I didn't do that much.
Right, okay,
it's
lovely.
One thing for me to decide.
Maybe I can.
Beautiful. Thank you. How time flies. Okay. You see, inherent in physical existence is a paradox. This isn't even yet a physical existence, incidentally. This is still a spiritual dimension, but it's moving towards some kind of finitude. How can there be any finitude? God is Ein Sof, so everything is Ein Sof. How can there possibly be a limited world? How can there be Kelim? How can there be vessels? So the breaking of the vessels is an expression of that paradox. To me, that's how I understand it conceptually. So God is making something which by its nature cannot be simply 1 + 1 = 2. It must have some kind of break in it. Because in a sense, what's happening is an impossible thing. See, existence is impossible. It's mysterious that from the point of view of the existentialist, existence is also impossible. The paradox of life, to Kierkegaard, Edvard Munch, the paradox of life is just simply being alive. Nothing else has to happen. You don't need suffering in order to make existence paradoxical. Without suffering, it's even more paradoxical. For suffering, God forbid, gives one something to fight about. Then it makes things more clear. Like in England, during the Second World War, there were very few suicides. People didn't kill themselves. They had something to live for. They had to survive. They had to do this. It's, there was a problem. You had to fight against the problem. When it's peacetime. Malkata Ambatia, the famous anti-war play in Israel, when it came out, it had in it a line, something like, you know, sometime people will throw themselves off a roof, you know, but now we're just at war. I met the writer.
Not
Levin. Yeah. So the idea is that the Mizbeach expresses Avodat HaBirurim, the service of sifting. V'yaduin, it's known, Shebemizbeach Yesh Beit HaChilot. We'll be finishing soon because we'll just get to the basic concept. The altar has two kinds of eating. One is Aleph, Achilat Kohanim Ubalim, the idea that the priests and the owners of the offering, there's the owners of the offering, the person bringing the offering, he brings the offering, the bull or whatever it is, it's a burnt offering, a sin offering, he brings the offering and he gives it to the Kohanim, and the Kohanim offer it on the altar. Now, certain kinds of offering, like a Korban Shlamim, or a Korban Pesach, a peace offering, a paschal lamb, that is given to the priest to offer on the altar, but then the owner also eats something. You get back the paschal lamb and you bring it home to your hotel in Jerusalem and the family eats it together at the Seder. So that eating is achilat adam. That's the human being eating. Okay, let's miss out the brackets. Beit, the second concept, achilat mizbeach, is the altar itself, which is consuming the offering, ha'achila shalamayla, which is the eating from above. Sha'al ze ne'ma'et kol bani lachmi le'ishai. And about that, God says, my offering, my bread, so to speak, my fires, reach nichoach l'ashem, a pleasant savor to God, pleasant ruach, a pleasant reach for God. Nachat ruach lefanai she'amati b'naaseh ratzoni. So to speak, God is pleased that we have followed His command. So that means the altar has two kinds of eating. The eating of the human being and the eating lamaila, above. And it explains here, shekeneged shnei inyanim eila shebemizbeach, kipshuto, corresponding to these two kinds of eating of the altar, yeshlam gamken shnei inyanei avodah b'shulchano shel adam ha'domen lemizbeach. There are two aspects of this, of service at the table of a person, which the table is like the altar. Umevi sham misefer tolat Yaakov. He brings there from a Kabbalistic book, Tolat Yaakov, by Rabbi Meir ibn Gabay, famous work. Umichidushei agadot me'arasha. This is a more exoteric work printed in the Talmud, in the back of the Talmud. Shezeh shulchano shel adam dome lemizbeach. Why is the table of a person like the altar? Mitzad shnei inyanim is because of two reasons. Aleph mitzad inyanat tzedaka shebeshulchan. The table of a person has the quality of tzedaka, charity. Sheni mitzad inyanat Torah shebeshulchan. And secondly, the Torah study, which takes place at the table. Shnei inyanim elehem keneged shtei achilot hanal. They correspond to the two kinds of eating of the altar. The human being eating at the table, how is that? The human being eating at the altar, and that transferred to the table, what's that? There is welcoming guests at one's table, which itself is a kind of charity, the giving of charity from the table. As it says in the Talmud in Berachot, the reason why the table of a person atones for him, like the altar, is because of the charity one does. Because a poor person might come to your table, you give the person food from the table. Or simply inviting guests. Which is also considered a kind of tzedakah, even though the person coming himself has his own home, but still the idea that you're welcoming people into your home and they're sitting at your table, that is a way of connecting together. Now the Talmud talks about the charity, the tzedakah, which is given by the husband and by the wife. The wife, it sees as being in the house, the itzara shricha bebeta, the woman is in the home, v'yava riftelani mekarva nata. And the wife gives a sandwich to the poor man, and he immediately enjoys eating the sandwich. Mashein kein labal, whereas the husband, noten ma'ot, he gives coins as charity, he gives money. So with the money, the poor man has to go to a shop and find a place to buy food. Whereas the wife, she's in the house, the poor man comes to the door, she says, oh, you're hungry? Here, let me make you a sandwich. She gives him a sandwich, he immediately is enjoying something to eat. Similarly with the charity of the table. One doesn't give money, one gives food. And even more, the gamet tzedakah, the isha, with the charity that the woman gives, efshar shetitem basar or chitim, she might give food, but it's food which needs preparation, like meat or wheat, which has to be ground or cooked. Hadorshim eze tircha, which needs some kind of operation before you can eat it. Masha'en ken b'shulchan, hare akol muchan lasuda. Whereas when you're inviting someone to your table, by definition, everything there, the table is ready to be eaten. From this we can understand the greatness of the tzedakah at the table of a person. The tzedakah is from the person's own food, the householder. He's eating at the table and it's his own food which he's now giving to his guest. So this has the idea, Tov ayin hu yivorach, ki notan milachmo ledal. The person gives of his own food to other people. Milachmo dafka. Specifically his own food. Now, so that is the human being eating. That's like the Kohanim and the Baalim who are eating with the Mizbeach. And now we have the idea of what is happening above. V'inyan achilat Mizbeach shebushulchan. And then there's a higher level. That is the way that the altar, so to speak, God is consuming something at the offering. Hi ha-Torah. That's the Torah that we speak at the table. Sha'arei ha-Torah y'chokhmato r'tzono shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah is the wisdom and will of God. V'lechein nikra b'shem lachmi li'ishai. And therefore it's called my bread to my fires. K'mo sh'katuv l'chu lachmu b'lachmai. Go and eat my bread. V'ad o'raita v'kutsha b'lichu k'lechad. Till one even speaks of Torah and God being one. In other words, the Torah is like some kind of deep connection with God. So much so as if the Torah were really, so to speak, physically part of God. Of course, God is not physical. That's why we have the word kaviyachol. A famous scholar, Michael Fishbane, wrote an article all about the word kaviyachol, all the different ways the word kaviyachol is used when it's talking about something which is beyond expression. But nonetheless, the Torah is speaking about our intimacy with God. V'hainu, d'nosaf amar shemuva sham, b'sefer Tolad Yaakov, apart from what's brought in that Kabbalistic book, the k'mo shebekol banot hayu Yisrael. Okay, so here's a further idea. A further image, which is brought, that there is, you've got the Anshei Ma'amad. When an offering was brought, I'm just going to say this b'kitzur, when an offering was brought in the temple in Jerusalem, you had Anshei Ma'amad, you had a group of people who would be, as it were, representatives of the Jewish people standing by that offering. And in the morning, they would meet in what became later the Beit HaKnesset, the synagogue. This was before synagogues existed. They would meet, and also before they existed, and they would read from the Torah, Parshat Bereshit. And as a result, you've got the idea of the together with the altar, together with the Mizbeach. There's also the reading of Torah. The reading of Torah goes together with the Mizbeach, with the altar. And in the same way, at our table, there is also the reading of Torah, as it says in Pirkei Avot. Because in chapter 3 of Pirkei Avot, chapter 3, Mishnah 3, that through the fact, Sh'al Yedei Shomer, that's through 4 lines from the bottom of this paragraph, through the fact that one says words of Torah at the table, through that this is called Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. So that gives the table the quality of being the table before God. It uses a very critical phrase about what happens if one doesn't say words of Torah at the table. That is not quoted in the discourse. He only quotes the positive thing. So there we have the idea that shlosha sha'achlu al shulchan echad v'amru alav divrei Torah, 3 people who ate at the table and said words of Torah, ki'ilu achlu mishulchano shel makom, it's as if they ate from the table of God, shenema, as it says, the verse in Ezekiel, Yecheskel, v'yedabe elai, the angel said to me, zeh ha'shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. So we've gone a kind of a circle round. We have the idea of the Mizbeah. Let's just see, to finish off. So we have the Mizbeach, we have the altar, and we have Shulchano Shel Adam. So in each of these, we've got a divine quality, represented by Hashem, and in the Torah, in the case of our human table, that is the study of Torah, Limud Torah. And we also have the human quality, Achilat Adam, and that is the Tzedakah or the Hachnasat Orchim. So in that way, we have a connection between, it's like linking, it's hyperlinks of texts. we've got the Talmud commenting on the verse in El Torah, V'hit kadishtem yitem kadoshim, which it links to the atmosphere around the table. There is the washing before eating, the washing after eating, and the blessings which are said at the table. That's one aspect. Then we have the verse in Yecheskel and Izekiel, which connects the table and the altar. Then we have the Pirkei Avot, which also connects the table and the altar with that same verse, but via Torah, particularly via Torah. And then we have also the phrase from the Talmud, which says, in the time of the temple, the Mizbeach was Mechaper. It was the altar that atoned for people. Now it's the table of a person which atones for people. How? Through the Tzedakah. So we have the Torah, the Tzedakah, and the table. So the effect of this is to render the human table in our home, just having an ordinary meal and maybe inviting a friend to share it with you, is actually and then you say a few words of Torah in one way or the other. So that is really a spiritual experience relating back to the altar in the temple and that whole spiritual dimension, which itself is all part of Avodat HaBirurim, the sifting of the sparks of holiness and the transformation of existence. So that is a glimpse of this discourse, which links our table with the table.
In we have a very temple. Good glimpse.
כעניין המזבח, בכלל, הקורבנות וכל הזה, יש פרשות שמסבירות בדיוק, כמו שבתפילת הבוקר, עם כל הכומרים שצריכים לעשות, עם רגליים, זה לא יפה, כן יפה. אומרים את זה בכזה, אומרים את זה כמה פעמים ביום, זה נשמע מוזר קצת. למה זה כל כך חשוב? הקטע הזה של
זה מה שאתה מצטט, זה על הסממי הקטורת.
כן, כן, בסדר.
ויש לקטורת כוח מיוחד.
כן, אבל זה כשאתה נמצא בבית המקדש, וישנו שם זה, והכהן הגדול שם את הקטורת, אבל אין, אז אני רק מספר על מה הוא היה עושה, ואם שמים את זה כך, ואם מערבבים את זה כך, וכל מיני פירושים. וזה מוכנס לתפילה של הבוקר, כאילו שזה
כאילו זה קיים.
כאילו זה כאילו, לא, אתה מצטט את זה, כאילו אתה עושה את זה בכל יום.
נכון, נכון.
אבל הקרבת קורבנות לא הייתה יום-יום.
הייתה.
מה, כהקרבת קטורת, כן.
קורבן תמיד.
חפחס ושחלי פחס בין הבאים. חצי בבוקר וחצי אחרי הצהריים. בכל יום היה קטורת.
כי אם אתה מסתכל על זה בפשט, אז זה נראה נורא מוזר. למשל, הכהן הגדול שם, אפילו ביום כיפור, אם אני לא טועה, כשהוא עשה את הזה, הוא יצא והחליף בגדים ורחץ את בשרו, זה נשמע קצת...
כן, זה בפרשת השבוע, אחרי מו. כמה פעמים, כן.
זה נשמע אבסורד, ביום כיפור?
כן.
הוא עשה את ה...
הוא הלך למקווה.
כן, אז איפה? אבל ביום כיפור אסור לך שום מעשה ושום...
אסור לנו ללחוץ, אבל בשביל הכהן גדול, הוא היה טובל במקווה, חמש פעמים.
כן, זה ממש עבודה, הלך לבגדים, לטבול, הלך וחזר. זה נראה לי קצת באמת מוזר, כל התיאור המדויק הזה של עבודת הכהן, יש הרי בתפילה במוסף,
כן, נכון.
עבודת סיפור שלם שם כן. מספר. זה נראה קצת לא מתאים ליום.
אבל זהו כן. איך שהחומש בעצמו מתאה את זה ומצווה את זה, וגם במסכת יומה.
אז איך היום אתה בעצם הופך את זה כמו שפה? הפכתי את הקרבת הקורבנות, הפכתי אותו לשולחן, ואני מסביר אותו ב... אין יותר קורבנות, לא עושים את זה, בית המקדש לא קיים. אז הנה, יש לי פה, מה שנקרא, דומה.
כן, אבל המזבח זה לא כל כך רחוק. אפילו בתיאור הזה, המזבח כפשוטו לא נמצא, אבל המזבח למעלה זה נמצא עוד. וגם מושג הזמן, בשביל החכמים, ואפשר להגיד בשביל עם ישראל בכלל, זה כמו זה סרקולר, זה מעגל, זה לא קו ארוך. בשביל האנגלים היום ולפני 2000 שנה זה ארוך ארוך ארוך, אבל בשבילנו זה תמיד אותו המעגל. בכל שנה יוצאים ממצרים, נכנסים, מגיעים למתן תורה בחג השבועות,
מתחילים וגומרים באותו יום.
כן, לא, אנחנו חיים עם הרגליים בשתי העולמות בבת אחת. אנחנו פה ב-2010, ואנחנו גם בעבר וגם בעתיד.
זה שלושה עולמות.
שלושה עולמות. אוקיי.